Thank you for coming this evening. We're about to commence proceedings. Carl Scully is my name. I'm the chair of the Canterbury-Bankstown Local Planning Panel. And we are here this evening for four matters. So I'll just introduce the panel. On my right is Michael Baker and Jason Perica. On my left is Peter Menton for Canterbury Ward, and Vicky Chen will participate on Reesby and Roseland Wards. I'd like to acknowledge country. The Canterbury-Bankstown Local Planning Panel acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land, water and skies of Canterbury-Bankstown, the Darug people. The panel recognises and respects Darug cultural heritage, beliefs and relationship with the land, and the panel acknowledges the First Peoples continuing importance to the Canterbury-Bankstown City community. Thank you. Do any of the members of the panel have conflicts they wish to declare? No conflicts. No. I'd also like to declare the minutes of the Canterbury-Bankstown Local Planning Panel held on the 3rd of November, having been confirmed as correct by the chair of that meeting. Now, I can indicate the first item is DA 99/2025 at Pheasant Street, Canterbury, seeking the demolition of existing on-site structures and construction of a multi-dwelling housing development of 18 two-storey dwellings with associated landscaping and swimming pool above basement garage. I have on the list here Rita Carras as an objector. Is Rita Carras here? If you could come down. Okay. Can you all hear that? Sorry, I wasn't speaking loud enough. Rita, you have the floor.
Thank you. Good evening, panel members. My name is Rita Carras, as was said, and I live on Pheasant Street with my husband, George, and we have lived there for 30 years. I'm here representing some of my neighbours who are here tonight and many more who are not. I support the panel's, or we support the panel's, proposal to refuse the development of the lots 16 to 22 on Pheasant Street. As you have identified, the application fails to meet the planning controls and is unsuitable under section 4.15 of the EPNA Act. It also conflicts with Council's vision for a livable and lovable city. Pheasant Street is a small, quiet cul-de-sac surrounded by parks and other dead-end streets. It is not designed to absorb additional traffic or construction activity of this size. Cars already struggle to pass and there is no turning space. People are often using each other's driveways in order to turn around. My husband is disabled and has serious health issues. His carers and visitors already struggle to park close to our home. Only last week we had the need to call an ambulance for an emergency, and as I stood on the street watching, I couldn't imagine how this development would impact any emergency services coming into the street. The ambulance had to block half the street and stop other cars coming through. 18 townhouses on this site will intensify traffic, congestion and risk far beyond what this street can safely handle. Environmentally, many established trees have already been removed from the site, and there is currently a large fig tree on the site that I would say is at least 100 years old that supports many native birds and wildlife. Under clause 6.4 of the CBLEP 2023, biodiversity values must be considered. This proposal conflicts with Council's commitments to sustainability and urban canopy protection. Public transport access is also very limited in the area. There's only one bus that runs nearby within the 1 kilometre radius, and it is infrequent and does not connect to Canterbury Station. Future residents would, like the current residents, rely on cars, increasing congestion and emissions. We understand that Council is growing, that the Council Canterbury area is growing, and we support appropriate development along major corridors, but this is not one of them. This is a quiet residential pocket. Allowing medium density development here is inconsistent with orderly planning and places an unfair burden on one small street. There is also substantial rock on the site. We are built on solid rock. Excavation to the size that is being proposed will mean means of drilling and noise. The vibrations, the noise and the dust that will be created will make our house completely unlivable. My husband is currently undergoing cancer treatment and we live directly next door. Prolonged noise will severely impact his recovery. We have a daughter who's considering having a baby next year. There is no way that she could live in our house with a newborn. No newborn should be subjected to that level of disruption. The panel has already identified major flaws in landscaping, solar access, deep soil, wall heights and basement design. These confirm that this is an overdevelopment and of a constrained site. For planning and environmental health and community reasons, I respectfully ask that this panel refuse this application. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. You're next door, are you?
Yes.
On the same side?
Yep.
24, did you
We're
say?
We're on number 14.
14, but on the same side.
Yep.
Yeah. At the back of your house, do you have the same sandstone rocks and things?
We do. Well,
do you mind me asking, what are they? Were they always there?
Yeah, it's just solid rock. The whole ground is solid rock with just a very thin layer of...
They weren't quarried or something 100 years ago?
I don't know. I don't know. I know when we built, the excavation was huge just for, you know, the piers of a small house, and that was a major... just to get the footings of...
You had to go into sandstone?
Yeah, we had to drill down through the sandstone into through the rock.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear about your husband too.
That's all.
Yeah, I'll just ask the panel, do you have any questions? Yeah, Jason.
If I heard you correctly, I think some of your concerns were about the nature of the development and being a quiet street, and, you know, lower scale development might be more suitable than medium density development somewhere else. So it is zoned for R3, so it is a medium density zoning. So villas and townhouses is a form of permissible development. So are you saying the zoning's wrong?
Absolutely, that zoning is incorrect. It should not be zoned R3. And we would we have been involved in supporting council to challenge that.
Right. Okay, thanks.
Nothing else? Yeah. No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next person is George Antonopoulos. Is he here? Yeah, please come forward. Thank you. You have the floor.
Yeah, good evening, panel. Look, I'd like to make it clear that I'm not against development. However, a large medium-scale development must be considered safety, traffic congestions, parking availability, public transport access, infrastructure capacity, and the impact on surrounding neighbours. Now, I live in Bilby Street, which is the street behind, and based on my own daily experience, first, most residents and my street have two or more cars because public transport is not close or convenient. This places immediate pressure on street parking. Second, Glenor Street, which runs adjacent to us, is already narrow and becomes difficult when two cars approach each other. Adding more vehicles will then increase the risk of accidents and congestion. Third, the recent development in the area combined with the new R3 zoning have led to more properties being built without adequate off-street parking. This forces more cars onto these streets. Fourth, the newly constructed dog park and the existing football and cricket fields brings additional visitors who park on Bilby Street, making parking even more limited for residents. On the weekends and afternoons, people from surrounding streets regularly park in front of my property, and I often left searching for alternative parking myself. Now, with my background in building industry, I know these issues are common. The house will typically have more than one car. Units and townhouses often have limited storage. So garages are used for storage, not parking. And visitors parking bays are often used by residents, leaving nowhere for visitors to park. Now, in my opinion, the surrounding streets simply cannot support the overflow of cars this development will generate. Finally, if this medium density development proceeds, it will set a precedent for similar developments in Pheasant Street and nearby streets. This will undermine the council's vision of a livable and lovable city. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, panel. Any questions? No. No, thank you very much. The next participants are two representatives of the applicant. Would they like to come forward? I have Joe El Sabah and Bernard Moroz, architect and town planner, respectively. are both here. Thank you. Could you state your full name and your position, just for the record?
Thank you, panel. My name is J.L. Sabav, Design Corp Architects. Bernard, unfortunately, is unable to make it tonight for personal reasons. I'm here representing my client. I'm here to speak against the recommendation in the report, and I'd like the panel to consider at least deferring the application. How long do I have to speak?
Usually 3 minutes, but
The 3 minutes that I'm currently given is the most that council has given my client to actually represent
but
on this application.
I won't get upset if you go a bit over.
Okay.
There's a number of issues that you probably should want to canvass.
Yeah, so the issue is here that my client has not been given the opportunity to actually assess the council letter. We were given 7 days and then granted a refusal. We feel that this is not enough, and in a setting where housing is required, in a zone that permits these typology of housing, I think it's only fair that this application be looked on in more detail. And us as the architects, planners, and the team that our client has engaged, be able to sit down with council and resolve some of these matters, not withholding the fact that number 20 to 22 had a previous development application approval for an affordable housing development that actually contained 10 townhouse development over a basement. My client acquired both sites, consolidated both, and ended up with 18 townhouse development instead of the 10 times 2 is 20. So we believe that it's a definitely well thought process that we've taken. It's not something that, you know, we pulled out of a hat. There's been a lot of process and thinking behind it. A few designs were presented, some that actually had 24 affordable housing, but we thought that having a typology of home that is needed in the area with a substantial amount of parking that actually removes all the parking off street and actually is contained within the basement, each townhouse having its own little courtyard, encouraging families to stay in those areas and providing housing typology that is much needed. That's all I've got to say. I do feel that, again, I think this recommendation has come pretty premature, I would say. And we should be able to be afforded that opportunity for a deferral.
So, a couple of things. There was no pre-DA meeting?
No.
Right. So, I understand council staff sent a detailed request for information and there was no reply.
The detailed request for information was that even if you do submit the information in the 7 days that we were given, the applicant, I do have the letter with me.
When did you receive that?
You can determine if this is a 6-page letter, and the summary of the end of the letter says, while this is not an exhaustive list of concerns that highlights why council is unable to support your application, it is important to stress that we are not able to offer opportunities to make changes to your proposal. This restriction is in line with changes that have been introduced by the New South Wales government aimed at reducing development application assessment times. It lists the read more about the statement of expectation. We intend to determine the application within 7 calendar days from the date of this letter, which is close of business the 6th of the 11th. Please consider council's adopted fee and charges which allow a refund of up to 50%.
So you got that 5 weeks ago.
But it took council 4 weeks to write this report. I think if they afforded us the opportunity and instead of writing, I don't know how many page report and had a sit down with myself, with my applicant, with my client and with my planner, we wouldn't have wasted your time, that's for sure.
Yeah, see, the difficulty is it's zoned for... The concept of what you're trying to do is approvable within the zone, but there's a number of issues that I think in a more interactive environment might have resolved some things. But you've got some fundamental milestones, for example, the basement excavation levels, remediation, non-compliance with height and FSR, which, by the way, relative to many other developments across Sydney, they're not major. They still require a 4.6. But there's a number of points that require addressing that means it's all but impossible for us to overcome them. We're not set up to do that.
Of course not.
And are you suggesting that had you been given a proper opportunity, you might have been able to mitigate, ameliorate, or deal with those multitudinous problems?
Look, this is my 27th year as an architect.
Yep.
And I can, hand on heart, say I can count one or two applications that have been approved by councils around New South Wales that didn't require some form of change. Yeah, I know the legislation is there to be followed, but also the Act allows you to submit something that subjectively meets the DCP and the actual laws that are being put in place. It's all about discussion. It's all about sitting down. What are your main concerns? Prioritise them. This is the first time I hear of some of the objections. I was never afforded the opportunity of receiving concerns of what they would actually, okay, these are the objections.
Not for me to suggest how you do your job, but a pre-DA meeting on this sort of development is very, very useful.
Look, I don't want this to be a pick on council day, but I've had pre-DAs and I receive pre-DA minutes with a copy and paste of the DCP.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, and that's another issue with the process. Yeah, we can sit here all night and discuss it.
I accept that. They sometimes are not useful and sometimes they are. But we are where we are today with multiple problems with us being able to overcome a refusal recommendation.
And I believe those problems are very much resolvable if an opportunity was presented to let's have a sit down and let's have a chat. But honestly, unfortunately, COVID has created a lot of keyboard stuff and we've lost. I'm actually so happy that this is the first time post-COVID that I attend a face-to-face planning meeting.
That's interesting.
Like, I actually commend you guys for actually opening up your chamber, because humanity has lost this touch of actually sitting down and let's work it through. We leave phone calls, we've got to email things. It's like we're becoming very robotic. And AI hasn't even touched the surface.
Yeah, I get that. So by way of example, the basement has, the argument from council is that you've not sufficiently justified the excavation and therefore the basements given the constraints of the site. And that's a problem unless you can sustain, you've got options, either you present a very good argument as to why the constraints of the site allow it, or you remove it and put new plans in.
Look, I think a very minor amendment to the basement. We've got surplus car spaces. And that's because, with all due respect to objectors and people that live there, I went and seen the site. I knew that there's going to be a traffic concern. So what do you do with traffic concerns? You ensure that you provide a product that's not going to actually cause more traffic issues than already is. So the basement is large enough to accommodate for two car spaces per townhouse. That's not a requirement. That's a bonus to this development. I can easily remove car spaces, minimise that basement, push the actual townhouses to the ground, work with council. But that is something that you can do over a workshop. This is something that you can actually do over a sit down and let's talk about this. I get my butter paper out and I sketch things out and then council would say, go away, have a look at it. And let's have a chat about it.
So, and on another matter, how do you deal with overshadowing, which is an issue?
Again, we can provide alley shadows, things that are concerns. You know, like we understand that the adjoining neighbour has some solar panels that they have concerns about. Yep, no, I mean, the letter said that there's solar panels next door. So now, having heard the objector, obviously this is one of the objectors that have submitted something. And we're not saying we're not going to tick as many boxes as possible. We will work with council to tick those boxes. My frustration is we never got that opportunity. And to give me 7 days to resolve something is not good enough. While an application sits on someone's desk for 8 weeks.
Did you ask for that opportunity?
Actually, we did.
When you got this email?
Yes, we did. My PA actually sent an email to council and a phone call, and they said, we're not giving you an opportunity. Take the 50%, 50% of the fees you've paid for giving me a letter and go away, or we're going to refuse the application. This is just, look, again, if the council, if the panel believes that this is the right, I know truly you don't believe that's the right process, but I understand your hands are tied. You can't even determine this application, and I'll tell you why you can't determine the application. And that should give you an indication that we have followed a lot of processes. There's an easement required from an adjoining neighbour. Iskander versus Sutherland, I believe, has made it very clear that you cannot, as a panel, determine this application tonight.
So who does own that land down the bottom?
So we've been told Sydney Water, we've been told Council, and then as of today, someone sent us a confirmation that could potentially be Crown land. So we're working through that process to actually not even ask for a deferred commencement, but rather something in place.
Lawyers and surveyors can sort that out.
Correct. So we're in that process. But I'm getting to the point where, you know, one of those points in that letter, we're already on it. And we know that no authority can make a determination because now, you know, there's case law against that. And we're on it. We're on top of it. But because we knew about it, we're acting on it. We know about some of the concerns in council. We want to act on it. But to sort of push us in the corner and say, you're going to get a refusal or take 50% of your fees. You know what? If I got 100% of the fees, maybe I would have... Yeah, you know what? Why not? We at least got a base to work with. Take the fees, have a meeting with council, and then discuss this with council, and then resubmit an application that hopefully it will take council 42 days to actually determine.
So I need to understand what you mean by deferral. What are you anticipating?
Look, I know it's the end of the year. What I mean by a deferral is give us an opportunity to sit with council. Look, if the end goal inevitably is going to be a refusal, then, you know, there's other pathways for this. If council is not willing to actually sit down and work through this letter and subjectively and objectively work through point by point with us and not dig their heels in the ground and say, no, this is it, then I don't even want to waste your time for another meeting. This is the decision they've made on this application, then we'd have to consider other pathways.
Well, you do have other pathways. And I sense the frustration because it is the concept of what you're trying to do is approvable. Just the detail, there's always the devil in the detail, makes it all but impossible for us to approve this tonight, if we were so inclined. Well, look, that's enough from me. I'll just go to the panel. Michael?
I had just one question. It was in relation to the contamination issue on the site. I noted that there was a preliminary contamination assessment undertaken, but it came to the conclusion that a detailed site investigation was required. Is there a reason why a DSI was not submitted with the DO?
So it's a bit of a catch-22. In order to do a full detailed analysis, you'd need to remove the homes. And to remove the homes, it's just another loss of income to the client. So it is definitely something that I believe can be conditional. And prior to even CC or prior, you know, like it can be something that can be conditioned.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm different in the opinion there. I don't believe that we can approve it until such time as it's been satisfactorily proven that the site is suitable. Is there no way that you could get advice from your contamination consultant about boreholes being drilled in other locations that still enable you to retain the dwellings?
Look, there is so many ways that can be done, but I think we've got a bigger issue than just that contamination, to be honest. We've got a 10-page letter, and that could be one of the points that could have easily been discussed to say, okay, what is a process of doing this? And look, if things get done, and then we form the opinion that council is happy with the application, we could easily demolish those homes under a CDC and do a proper assessment of the site. And council would be comfortable, and the panel would be comfortable to determine the application based on the facts in front of them rather than a prelim report.
Jason?
I do have one question that my client asked me to ask the panel.
Sure.
Why was this application referred to the panel? Was it the number of objections? Was it the cost of the development? Was it just a normal process that this...
I think it was the number of objections.
Can we get a figure on how many objections was received?
Do you want to answer that? There was more than, I think it was more than 10. What was the total number of objections?
Would you like me to answer that? So yes, it came up to panel because of the number of objections. And I believe it was 34 objections. It should be in the report on page.
So if there's more than...
Are those objections validated or is it just because it's a number of objections?
Well, they have to be unique. So when you say 34, council staff, was that 34 unique?
On page 37 of the report, 34 unique objections. The application was then notified for another 2 weeks. In November, and another two submissions were received to that to bring a total of 34 unique objections.
So there were 38 received, 34 are unique. I think you appreciate you don't do 10 radioed off same letter with different signatures on it. Trip-wise, they need to be genuine letters of complaint. So that's why it's more than 10 unique, and that takes it into the local planning panel.
So 10 is the key?
Sorry?
10 objections.
10. 10's the tripwire.
Yeah. Okay, thank
That's
you.
Why. Just out of interest, the remediation, you're not able, I know in some circumstances you can run core, you can do a borehole under the buildings. I've been on panels where we've required that because we've had pushback from an applicant and we've said, well, we can't deal with that. You've got to go and find a way where you do it. And they find a way.
We are finding a way.
Okay. All right.
Because the other pathway would need that to be resolved as well. So.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That's item one. The next item, item two, is in relation to a development application at Homer Street and Wardle Road, Erwood, to modify the approved five-storey shop-top housing development to include two additional stories for 22 dwellings, a new third level basement, and internal and external alterations to the approved development, including ground and basement levels. I understand there are no objectors, but we do have Theodore Lucas and Gary Chapman available to the panel to answer questions. Could you come forward, gentlemen? Thank you. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Happy for you to address the panel if you've got anything you'd like to say.
We'll be short because when applicants get a...
Sorry, I can't hear you.
We will be short because when applicants get a recommendation for approval and a report in this manner, we're simply here to support that and questions as required.
Yeah. Stay quiet and cop the recommendation.
Is there one thing that I want to add?
Yeah, sure. If you could just speak to the mic.
There's only one thing, that it was a pleasure dealing with Robert Steedman and Christina. They were to the point, gave us a chance to amend things. We sort of came back to them, whatever amendments they asked for, and we worked together to get a result, which was fantastic. So,
it's appreciated, so thank you. Does the panel have any questions? Jason?
Yep. I've got two. Maybe the more straightforward one first. So this, I saw the affordable housing, I think it's 17 or 22, and there's a standard conditions in there about proving and putting on the title, as you'd expect, I think standard in the SEP. some councils put on a condition that requires you to prove that there's a contract with a community housing provider prior to starting the work. Have you got one?
And we're in the process now of just finalising that.
Would it be a problem if there was a... Would you have a problem with a condition that required prior to commencing work, say, or prior to CC, I'm not sure, I'm just opening the question, of requiring some sort of proof that a contract's been entered into with the CHP? I mean, to be honest, the concern with me with these is you get the bonuses based on being affordable housing. Yes. You don't want a scenario where having taken the benefit of, in this case, height or FSR, no FSR control, and then somehow the affordable housing doesn't happen after you've got the benefit of reporting, and you've already approved the envelope, and it's just not good.
Yeah.
So anything that can kind of firm up the commitment to the affordable housing rather than right at the end of occupation, is there...
I might just ask my client, is that okay?
Yeah.
And then I can just answer it.
Do you have a problem with a condition that says prove there's a contract with a community housing provider before you start works?
Sorry, just hold on. Could you come forward and just to...
I think it's better off to sort of provide a letter. Just, I think it's usually a letter of offer.
Hold on. If your client could just announce his name just for the record.
Yes, from what I understand, there is already a very similar condition to that.
Sorry? No, I need you to state your name and your position.
Oh, sorry. George Vassiliadis.
You're the owner?
Yes, one of the owners, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so to clarify the question, there is a condition that says you've got to place a covenant on the title requiring those 15 or 17, I can't remember the number, affordable housing units, and it lists them, that they are provided for affordable housing. That's not the question. That's there. I'm asking, have you got a problem with another condition that says before you start works that there's a arrangement, some sort of commercial arrangement or proof of arrangement with a community housing provider up front?
Okay. What I'm saying, there is a condition in respect of that, very similar, because I've looked at that.
To be clear, I think, panel, you're referring to condition 56.
Yeah, 56, and that's prior to OC.
Correct, I mean, that's, as you know, that's the normal procedure.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the development consent's issued, that envelope is there, those units are nominated, and then the building's constructed, and to state the obvious, prior to OC, you've got to have that in place.
Yeah.
I'm not really understanding the point, to be honest.
Let me be more direct. Where are you at with negotiating with the community housing? I'm just trying to suggest something that works for you, that provides some certainty that isn't at the 11th hour. That's all.
What about something like this? What about a condition that says prior to issue of the final CC? Because you know you stage the CCs.
Yeah.
So prior to issue of the final CC, not OC.
Yeah.
So that way you can't get the final CC.
Some proof of arrangement.
Some proof of a letter of offer or something from the community.
Some proof of engagement with the community.
I think from the commercial side of things, I don't know if that would be possible to enter into an agreement.
Aren't you negotiating with the community hasn't provided it? If you're not, that's what's worrying me.
Yes. But so I think prior to the OC, then that something
but
like
when
that
are you
be
going placed. To settle with the community housing provider your commercial arrangements to ensure that they happen on this site? It's going to be early, isn't it?
Well, it would have to be prior to the OC.
Well, yeah, but aren't you doing that now?
Sorry.
Haven't you got any lined up?
Yeah, go.
It's going to occur. You've got, assuming it heads down the path of consent, while you're working on your construction certificate, you'll need to talk to community housing provider.
It's quite a long process. Yeah, so I'm just trying to work something. Anyway, it worries me that it's causing a problem, I guess, but...
I think there may be a condition of consent that says prior to issue of the final CC, you know what I mean? Because that way, assuring excavation and all that...
Again, when you say the CC, there is an issue with that.
Okay.
Or first occupation
certificate. First occupation certificate, because you can't enter, you can't use the premises until...
But that's years away. Surely there's something you can provide that provides... Basically, I'm of some certainty that this thing's going to happen.
You know what actually happens? I think what a lot of people are doing is I've spoken to St. George Community Housing. They just give you a letter of offer. Yeah, we'll give you a letter of offer. And people just submit that to council. It means nothing.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
We want to be given the opportunity to negotiate with these guys and then
Yeah, okay.
That's the only thing. It's very easy for me to get an offer and say,
it's not legally binding.
I thought we've got to be pretty crazy to go ahead and start building this thing without a commitment, but
possibly have a contract before the occupation certificate.
Yeah, so I would say contract before the OC, not just letter of offer, which if he decides to start building without it, it'll...
Yeah, okay. I think we get where I'm coming from. Just the last question is about parking, which initially was a bit of a concern to me looking at the numbers, but looking at the condition about the allocation, it looks condition 58 talks about the allocation of parking. Looks like there's 128 car spaces for about 120-something units. So it's not excessive parking, but it does... Is there a bit of catch-up, though? Because there's only 22 extra units, but there's a whole basement with...
Yeah, it's only because
79 minus the 14 to get the ramps down.
It's for the supermarket, so if something happens with that, they obviously ask for a lot more cars than what you actually require. So, and we're actually already excavating, so the lower base was only half a level, but you still got to shore down to the lower level anyway. So it doesn't make a difference in terms of that. So.
Right. So some of it was providing the parking for the supermarket, which you had to provide further down. Right. Okay. That's it. Thanks.
Mine's more of an announcement. I'd like to thank the people who put in submissions and also the applicants. It's very much appreciated. And I'd just like to take opportunity for those who participated in items 1 and 2, and for the rest of you, please have a Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. Okay.
Thank you, Peter. And the Greek restaurant goes, does it?
We'll try and move it somewhere else.
Good on you. Thanks for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you, Peter.
We'll now be joined by Vicky. Vicky Chen, representing Revesby and Roselands Wards. Thank you, Vicky. The next one, item number 3, is respect of DA 1027-2025 to LS Mare Street, Panania. I only have... Well, this is in relation to alterations and additions to a newly built structure in accordance with the approved complying development certificate and use as a two-storey detached secondary dwelling and attached garage. I have a speaker objecting, Nancy Catroni. Is Nancy here? If you could come forward, please.
Good evening.
Thank you. Good evening. You have the floor.
I'm here because someone is building, they're putting a building at the back of my house, and I lose all my privacy. I can't use the back of my house. They can see right through from the back through the front door. As I open the front door, I can see the structure there. And what I can't understand is, don't you supposed to do the plans first and put the construction up later when it gets approved? Or you build what you want to build and then you put the application in? As soon as I saw something was happening, I called the council. They didn't know anything about it. A couple of weeks later, I went to the council. They told me to put an application and go here, do that, and the website, this and that. English is my second language, and sometimes I don't understand the abbreviation and stuff. So I went to a solicitor. I spent $1,300 for it, and he found that they were building illegally. They've got this room on the second floor and the window right into my back area, my living space, and through the house. In the morning, I get downstairs, I open the blind, fresh air comes in. They come in too. I'm not saying they're going to sit there and watch me all the time, but potentially they can. It's totally, I lost my privacy totally. So I'm asking you, please, if you can come in and have a look from my prospect, inside my house and have a look at the situation. Please ask yourself, would I like this situation? If the answer is yes, go ahead and give them the permit. But if not, please at least get those windows closed. They've got four walls, so they can put a window somewhere else, not inside my house.
Thank you very much. Now, we did actually go out to the site and had a look from the backyard. I think your Thank house you. Is the one on the other side
it's
of the...
It's right direct. Yeah, yeah. It's like a towering over me.
Yes, no, we
I'm going to lose the use of my
backyard. Where are you? 4, 4A, 6? What house is yours?
194A.
194A. Okay, so you're, you right share direct. The back boundary.
Sorry?
Your backyards meet with them.
Yeah.
Questions? Exactly. Jason?
I mean, even though they stopped for the application to come through, they're still continuing doing things. They had a tap on to for the elements, you know, but the window took it off. Before the application started, there was frames but not windows. Now there's windows in. So they've been working while this is happening. So, I mean, is there a law? How things get done?
Well, I'm not sure I can answer that. But I don't want to
ask
the panel.
I can go ahead and put a granny flat. You know, just a granny flat to solve the problem. We deal with the application later.
You know, you're not...
is not the way to do it, is it?
You're certainly not supposed to.
That's right.
That's not how the... So... You're not supposed to.
That's what I... You know.
Jason's got a question.
We've got a further question. So, it's two stories.
Yes.
Have you got a problem with the top story or the bottom story or both?
They can build horizontally, I don't care.
The bottom is the second top floor. Right.
Because they're looking right into inside the house.
Okay, thank you.
I won't be able to. That's the only light that I get from the sliding door. And, you know, you go in and out.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much for addressing us this evening. That concludes item number 3. Item number 4 is an application by St George Hotel to extend the hours of operation to 4 a.m. Monday to Saturday and any public holidays falling on those days. I have Sarah Malik as a speaker. If Sarah could come forward. Thank you. You have the floor.
Thank you so much for having me, council members. I really appreciate this opportunity. So I'm speaking as a resident and immediate neighbour of the St George Hotel, located at 618 Canterbury Road, Belmore. And I wanted to lodge and make clear my strong objection to the proposal to extend the trading hours at the pub until 4 a.m. From Monday to Saturday and on public holidays. So my objection is in four parts. And, you know, our community experiences a lot of the negative impacts of late night alcohol consumption associated with the venue, including one, increased violence and antisocial behaviour. So I feel like extending the hours of alcohol service will inevitably contribute to more alcohol-fueled violence. This includes street fights, verbal abuse, threatening behaviour in the vicinity of homes, noise, adult men pissing around children. Number two, domestic violence links. There's a lot of evidence connecting excessive alcohol availability to higher rates of domestic violence. And I believe that extending hours of alcohol sales in our area really risks compounding already serious social harms. Three, lack of safety for families and residents. So our family is home, our building is home to many families and kids, and already residents have to contend with a lot of unsafe and disruptive behaviour from patrons leaving the venue at night. And extending those hours till 4 a.m. will only worsen the noise, intimidation and safety concerns for those nearby. Number four, community well-being over industry profit. Now, most of the people in my building are immigrants, people who speak English as a second language. They don't necessarily have the ability to come up and do submissions like this or understand complex paperwork, but I am a representative of them, and I'm coming to seek to represent them. And, you know, hotels, pokies and gambling industries, they have massive lobby groups and they have a huge amount of lawyers to represent their interests. So I'm really seeking, as a resident, to come forward, and I hope that you can support us in this, because last time the hotel made an application to increase signage around the hotel, huge big yellow dollar signs, like Las Vegas style. The council supported our submission, but they appealed to the courts and their lawyers won. So, you know, we really believe that residents, even working class immigrant residents, have a right to live in a safe and peaceful environment. And we really believe that council should not allow industry mining and pressure to override the clear objections and lived experience of local residents. We believe that this application will only exacerbate existing problems, and the proposal really fails to demonstrate any community benefit. Extending these hours will not benefit the local community, and it really poses a significant risk to health, safety, and social cohesion. So for these reasons, I really urge the council to refuse this development application in the strongest possible terms. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Just to be devil's advocate, they're seeking an hour. Would one more hour make much of a difference to whatever problems might already be there?
Yes, because a lot of the residents also practice Ramadan, and those hours are really crucial in February for prayer and reflection. And we believe that, you know, fighting any extension is important. We have kind of fought a bit of a losing battle here. But, you know, I think that the longer that it stays open, the more risk there are to community members. So we feel like it's still an important objection to raise.
Okay, panel, any questions?
Michael. If I may, sorry, can I just confirm the property that you reside in? Is it?
Yep, it's the Voyage Apartments at 630 Canterbury Road, Belmore. So it's right next door to the hotel, like it shares a wall. So we hear all the noise and, you know, a lot of the men exiting and entering. So it's in close proximity to the residential dwelling.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And
thank you.
Do you, roughly how long has that development been there?
It's been there for a long time, but initially when I moved in, it was not open to the extent that it is now. They had an extension of pokies. They've extended that there. They've extended a lot of the signage, which is quite garish and extensive. So it's been a slippery slope. We really feel like the hotel, pokey and gambling industry has really negative social impacts, and these lobby groups are quite powerful. So we really seek the support of council to limit their growth and continued expansion next door.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I have down here Brett Tobin, senior associate at Hatzik Kuzik Lawyers, representing the applicant. And Mr. Tobin, are you accompanied by Mr. Wiggins?
Correct.
Right? Michael That's Wiggins, correct. Director of St. George Hotel Belmore Proprietary Limited. Yeah. Thank you. You have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you, panel. This application is seeking an increase of 1 hour only to 4 a.m. It already trades till 3 a.m., as you're well aware, and able to trade till 4 a.m. on public holidays as well. The extended hours will provide an additional service to the local community by allowing the hotel's facilities to be on offer to persons who finish work in the early hours of the morning and those who have flexible working hours to attend to wind down and relax. Council's planning officers have prepared a comprehensive report which addressed the submissions received and also recommends the approval of the application. The report also confirms police have been consulted and have no objections to the application. The assessment report contains conditions which should be applied if the application is granted. I only wish to speak on several of those conditions, particularly conditions 13, 14 and 16. Condition 13, yep, thank you. 13, 14 and 16. Yes, I do. Condition 13 requires security guards to be present from 10 o'clock. The hotel's existing development consent, which it currently operates pursuant to, has a requirement for security guards to be present at the hotel already. So it's contended that condition 13 should not be applied as there is caused confusion and conflict between the two requirements.
Sorry, walk me through. I'm a bit slow at my age. What's the conflict?
Well, if there's one condition, if there's different times, one says 9 o'clock on the existing condition, on the existing consent, This one says 10 o'clock.
So if this stands, what would happen?
This stands, well, the security guards would be there, but I'm just saying to stop conflict.
So one, well, currently you have to have security guards on duty from 9, this says from 10.
Correct.
So we would need to amend that to say 9 p.m.
That's correct.
And then you'd have no problem.
I'd have no problems.
Okay.
Because it'd be the same.
Okay.
It'll align.
Or no. Duly noted. Okay. Next one.
The CCTV condition requires the CCTV system to operate in accordance with the New South Wales Police Standards. We were never provided with a copy of the police submission, so we're unable to know what standards these are. In its place, we request that the CCTV requirement be the CCTV condition usually imposed by the Independent Liquor and Gaming Authority on all licences.
Can I just pause you there? The council officer who did the assessment report, what's the story on this?
These conditions were provided
by... Can you speak to the mic?
Sorry, these conditions were provided by the community safety team in liaison with New South Wales Police. These conditions were requested by the police.
So the local police requested this. And are there standards that are available from New South Wales Police?
I would assume they have standards. I've not seen them.
I mean...
Those standards are different to those which are imposed by the Independent Liquor and Gaming Authority, which is the standard statutory body which regulates all licensed premises within New South Wales. I can give you a copy of the condition that we would be requesting.
What's the difference?
Well, I don't know because I haven't seen the standards from the New South Wales Police, but this is the condition that is imposed on all licensed premises, particularly hotel licences, which are required to have a CCTV condition.
And you can leave that.
I can copy of that.
I have a copy and
In principle, no problem with a decent CCTV system that'll be maintained, operated, etc. And if something happens, the cops can turn up and get a copy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
That's a condition. There's a requirement for within 24 hours they have to provide a copy of the...
So if we replaced that condition 14 with that, you'd be happy?
Absolutely happy.
Okay, all right. Noted.
The last one is condition 16. 16 has two limbs. The first limb is that all staff must hold a valid RSA certification and follow RSA requirements. That says all staff.
Yeah, you're
suggesting serving alcohol. No, I'm saying that only staff that are required to serve alcohol. That's right.
Yeah, so it needs to be linked to alcohol.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want cleaners and...
No, and kitchen staff and things like that, because otherwise...
Or security guards, do they have
security
to...
guards will have to have qualification.
Yeah, okay. We'll note that. Other than those three, you have...
The second one is that the imposition of this condition would defeat the purpose of the application.
People would still be able to stay between 3 and 4. This just says you can't enter after 3.
Well, the issue is that people who want to come in, who finish 3 o'clock, can't come in. And that's the whole idea of the application.
The whole idea is just to get those extra people finishing work after 3 a.m. to stay 1 hour. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying is that the people who were not finished and can't, who want to come to the hotel can't if that condition is applied.
That was the purpose of it. But that, surely the purpose would also be to allow people who are already there to stay
now. Oh, it is. That's right.
But there's lots, I'm just thinking broadly here, you know, gates, driving range. Closes at 9 p.m. Last bucket of balls 8 o'clock. You imagine this: pub closes at 4 a.m. Last patrons enter at 3. I mean, is that devastating? Oh, I wouldn't have thought so.
Can I ask? Is there any conditions on your other DA that of a similar effect that have an earlier time?
There is no conditions on the DAs. Other DAs.
But presumably, the logic was to limit the impact on the neighbours of people coming in late.
There's no condition.
My hunch is that's not a shocking condition.
Can I just ask my client? If that's the case, could I ask if it would be 30 minutes before closure?
What do they say on the TV shows? We'll take it on advisement. So we'll have a conversation and deliberation. So I hear you. But
they just allow those other patrons who want to come in, and there will be closing. There is a closing procedure to come in, so it's not like the hotel will just close and everyone pushes out. There is a closure.
I'm only one of a group, but my hunch is you've got a point with the first two and at least half of this. But
yeah, that's my maybe. I think it's a stretch to get the 4A in the residential area. I think, you know, joining residential uses, you're doing pretty well to get that if we approve it.
I think this point's at the weakest of your other points.
I take that.
Said with respect.
Understandable. Yeah. I can only ask you.
Sure. And I'll undertake to ensure we have a discussion around it.
Thank you.
Is there anything else you wish to raise?
No.
Panel, Jason, you've got one? Yes, please.
I can only ask as well. I've read your plan of management, and there are residential properties surrounding you. I get that it's an E-zone, it's a business zone, and you've probably predated a lot of people who've moved in afterwards, and that's a lot of the tension now, you know, for late-night trading and entertainment precincts and so on. So there's always a balance there. But there's no provisions that I could see in the plan of management about ongoing community liaison. And the suggestion I'm about to ask, I'm maybe doing a bit of a sales pitch first, but I think there's some benefit where pubs do have an established mechanism to talk to neighbours. It's some sort of community liaison process. It might be once every 3 months, and maybe it's just at a table in the pub, perhaps at one night that suits people, where you can get together and people can say, look, we've got a bit of an issue with, I don't know, the honking or the way cars are coming in. If you could do this, that would limit the lights in our place, or you could extend the fence a bit. So where there's direct communication with neighbours, proactively between the public and the neighbours, it tends to help both parties, I think, and keep things away from the council or now, you know, Officer Gaming and Racing. So long sales pitch to say, would you have a concern with a provision in the plan of management, if it was to be approved, along the lines of establishing such a thing where you'd have a regular meeting with you go through a process of establishing community liaison group, a flyer, you pick a group of a few people that represent the surrounding area, and you meet at a regular interval that's not so onerous, and perhaps publish the minutes on your website. Would that cause a problem to you or not?
No, my client says no. Maybe we could do it every 3 months or...
Yeah, well, you'd think... I mean, look, sometimes these things might be 3 months, and after a year or two you don't... You know, they might even think that's too often. Yep. They might say, we only need to meet every 6 months or on as necessary. Who knows? But I think it's good to have a regular process, at least for the first year, and then that group itself decides whether it's, you do need to...
I can say that my client has told me that the hotel hasn't received any complaints from local residents.
Nothing at all.
And the hotel has been operating for 3 a.m. for the last 16-plus years.
Right.
It's been there for a long time before that, too.
And the other thing I did notice in the plan of management, that you often do see in there, is some provision of letting neighbours know who the contact person is, so if they do have a concern, they can ring the duty manager or a contact first rather than ringing the police or something. Would you have a problem with that?
No, that wouldn't be a problem at all.
Yeah, thanks.
Michael. Just wanted to ask you a question about your capacity of your pub. Roughly how many people are you licensed to have in the pub? Is there numbers on your licence?
No, a liquor licence does not, the licence issued by the authority, or independent liquor and gaming, does not impose capacity on a licence.
Okay.
It's regulated by the DA. Okay. And the DAs are silent for the hotels.
Yep. And are you able to then give us any information about how many people roughly do you have in the pub in that late night trading? So it comes 3 a.m. at the moment. How many typically on an average night, and how many staff would you have on board as well?
Okay, so we would have four staff, one security guard, and at 3 a.m. we would have around about 15 to 20 patrons. Sometimes there might only be 8.
And sometimes more, totally.
Rarely. Rarely, yeah.
And can I ask a follow-up question? You mentioned a moment ago about the phase-out process. At 3 o'clock, you don't put 8 or 15 patrons on the street right on 3 a.m. What process do you have in place?
Okay, so At 2:30 a.m. currently, we call last drinks and we just go around to each patron and advise them that the hotel will be closing in 30 minutes.
So, yeah, sure.
I guess on the same question, because it's not unknown for pubs to have approvals, whether it's DA and licence, sometimes they're conflict, but till 3 a.m. but not open till 3 a.m. So people say, yeah, they have a problem till now with the 3 a.m. operating hours, but they actually close at midnight because there's not enough people demand to keep the place open past a certain hour. Is that the case for you? Like, do you close earlier than 3 on certain nights? Is it variable every week, or are you pretty well bang on?
No,
it's three.
It's bang on every week.
Really? Every night of every week, 3, except for Sunday? Right, okay.
Even if there's only 15, 20, 25 people there, it's still... We're still open, no matter what.
Okay, thanks.
Just out of interest, what's the peak number of patrons at what time, roughly?
It would probably be around the time in between 7 p.m. until midnight. We may have 45 patrons.
Okay, so it's not a huge pub.
No, it's not. Yeah. Definitely not.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
I'll just add that most of our patrons actually drive. So we only have parking for 20, 27 vehicles. And like I said, most of the patrons drive.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.